Such an important message. Such an important message, such an important campaign or platform. It is great to be with you this morning. It is wonderful to be in Oregon for the first time in 6 months. This is the land where both my soul and my family live. And as I crossed the border through a snowstorm last night up on the pass at about 6 o'clock at night, I felt a sense of homecoming. And I felt what a good time it is to be a Unitarian Universalist, no matter what state you're from. Back home in California, we are celebrating that fact that a federal appeals panel ruled that our Proposition 8, banning same-sex marriage, is unconstitutional. And back home, Amen. Back home in California, we stood on the side of love and we are making the way for marriage equality. And here recently in Ashland, you held your bodacious rainbow ball, proudly and lovingly asserting that the GLBT community is welcome in this congregation in town. And do you know how important it is that you said to this community and to this part of Oregon what you stand for and who you stand for? It was a fun night, but you told them who you stand for and who belongs to you. And of course, in your district, it's also been a great month to be a Washington resident, where marriage equality became the law of the land and will go into effect in June. It's such a good time to stand on the side of love. I'm so proud these days to call myself a UU. And it's not just because of marriage equality. You might know that those bright gold standing on the side of love t-shirts and banners show up at marriage equality rallies, but they've been worn to support humane immigration reform. They've been held up at the heart of Occupy Wall Street. Our t-shirts, our Unitarian Universalist message of standing on the side of love has appeared in the New York Times, and all the way over on Fox News. And the moment that I got goosebumps was listening at one point to Morning Edition and hearing the reporter on National Public Radio talk about the bright gold t-shirts. So we stand on the side of justice and of love, and sometimes we have sat in jail cells. We have sat in jail cells. And because of that, I don't know if you know that we have a new name, a new shorthand in the world, which some of you will appreciate because Unitarian Universalists is a 10-syllable mouthful. When we are out in public declaring that we stand on the side of love, people have, honest to God, strangers have taken to calling us the love people. Oh, you're the love people. You're the love people. People have approached our Unitarian Universalist clergy in jail and hugged them and said, "I'm just so glad you're here." So what brings me the most joy as a longtime UU, as a longtime love person, is not really that we're showing up in the media. It's not just that we get press. It's nice. The visibility, what pleases me most is that the Standing on the Side of Love campaign has given us a voice and a place and an identity. And we have badly needed this, I believe. It is important that we know who we are. And it's important that we be able to articulate our religious identity in all the different ways that's possible. Because myths and half-truths about us abound. Lots of myths. Lots of bad jokes with kind of prickly punchlines. And so if you ask around, or if you just keep your ears open, you will hear any of the following. You will hear that UUs don't stand for anything except for liberal politics, which in itself is a stereotype. You'll hear that our worship life centers around an intellectual and not a spiritual center. You will hear that Unitarian Universalism is a religion of individualism, and that if you're a UU, you can just believe anything you want. And I am here to declare these statements to be untrue, in my opinion. And as I counter each of these myths with helpful heresies, You might not agree with me, and you don't need to. At its best, a sermon is a conversation starter. It's a way to begin a dialogue between people and among people that might last throughout the journey. So for all of the UU myths out there, this at least is true. We don't have to share the same beliefs and the same truths. So I will start with my truths. The first myth is that there is no there there. There's no there. You heard in the reading today Meg Barnhouse tackling this first great myth when she says people talk about liberal religion as if it's a thin gruel watered down to please everyone. So general, it's meaningless. She doesn't name these people. One of them might be a certain national radio host whose name rhymes with Harrison Peeler. See aforementioned jokes with prickly punchlines. It's one of the most widespread misunderstandings about Unitarian Universalism that because we don't have dogma and because we don't have creed, ours is just this empty skeleton of a religion. And what some outsiders don't understand is that UUism is an alternative religion, but it's not an alternative to religion. Other faiths take these immovable planks of dogma and they nail them into the support beams of their religion, and they block out the elements of doubt and mystery. But we, UUs, invite each person to drape their vibrant silks of belief and conviction across the rafters. Contrary to popular belief, says the Reverend Dan Harper, it's not easy to be a Unitarian Universalist, because if you are a UU, you will care deeply about making this world a better place for all persons, the point where you devote your whole life to that end. And you heard in our reading Meg Barnhouse say, the principles are demanding enough to make me whine. To make me whine. So we UUs occupy a colorful, shimmering tent of our own creation, the walls shifting as we take down faded bolts of fabric that no longer serve us, and we replace them with new truths born of experience. Myth number two, UUs go it solo. Last fall, I met someone in my town who reminded me about this myth that is ripe for busting, and that is that Unitarian Universalist is an identity that you just slip on and off like a pair of hiking boots. This man met me just out in the world, and he learned that I'm a UU minister, and he said, well, I'm a UU too. Now, there are two congregations in my town, and I knew he didn't belong to my congregation, so I said, oh, then you're a member of the other church. And he said, no, I don't go to church. I just consider myself a UU. But that's what's so great about Unitarians. You don't have to actually go. And that was news to me. And on that day, it was not the time or place to engage in myth busting, and I left little bite marks on my tongue. If I had felt free to respond, I would have said something like this. Everything I understand about Unitarian Universalism, everything our congregations do and say, begins with the belief that we are in relationship with one another. So you can admire UUism from the comfort of your home, or the brunch table, or the hiking trail. You can read about us, and you can feel allied with us in social justice, and you can buy the Standing on the Side of Love t-shirt and wear it around town, but ours is not a theoretical faith. It's lived, and it's embodied, and it can only be real when it's put into the practice of relationship. So saying that you're a UU without being part of a congregation, to me, is claiming that you visit Germany by eating bratwurst on your couch watching Rick Steves. I say you have to bring yourself to the community and you have to roll up your sleeves and engage in those relationships and support your chosen congregation. Support it with your time, talent, and treasure. And that's what makes you a UU. The third myth, individualism rules. Relationship is central to this one too, to busting it. That Unitarian Universalism prizes individual freedom more than anything else. I don't agree. I think it's a half-truth. And I will borrow a heresy from UU leader Mike Dural when I say personal freedom and individual autonomy have outlived their usefulness as core values of Unitarian Universalism. Now, I cherish our fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. And I believe that we honor the right of conscience when we hear the voice of everyone equally and we allow everyone to have a say. These congregations of ours are places where people do speak their truth because everyone has a piece of it. We need not think alike to love alike. And healthy democracy and the voicing of truth should not entail bitter debate and the choosing of sides and games of allegiance. And yet it happens sometimes. In some UU congregations, there's an overinterpretation of this principle of democracy when an individual agenda rises above and apart from the greater good. Krista Tavis explains this beautifully. She says, "We promote freedom, but not freedom at all costs. This is not a religion for lone rangers. It's a religion for lovers of freedom who are called into community because," and this line shimmers up at me from the page, "in community, we're held accountable for the consequences of our beliefs." So as people of faith, our relationships come before any one issue, any one person, because this religion requires us to harness some of our autonomy in the service of the common good. Myth number four, that UUism is a religion from the neck up. In 1838, Ralph Waldo Emerson used Harvard's pulpit, Harvard Divinity School's pulpit, to attack his Unitarian colleagues. He was not very nice on that day. He attacked his colleagues who offered nothing but corpse-cold religion to their congregations. And nearly two centuries later, we UUs still struggle to overcome this charge. Worship life is grounded in intellectual stimulation. Our UU congregations exist, I think, to transform the hearts and souls of our members, to then go out and transform the world. And our purpose, and if this is heresy, so be it. I'm leaving town in a couple of hours. Our purpose is to help people live lives of purpose and meaning and to encourage people, to encourage one another to spiritual maturation. So when I craft sermons and worship services every week, my goal is not to provide intellectual stimulation that you might appropriately pursue on C-SPAN or in an adult ed course. I'm interested in shaping our religious journey as a relational one, as experiential. And in my congregation, I craft sermons so they offer chewy bits of material for spiritual reflection, tools for our spiritual toolbox. What are the deepest mysteries? What are the deepest truths that life has revealed to you? That's what I want to know. And then I want to say, because here are mine. the last myth, myth number five, the one I'd most like to pierce and bring down, anything you want. The intensely curious outsider often wants to know, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? And I say, woe to those, woe unto those who offer the well-intentioned but sloppy shorthand response, anything you want. This myth really does get me steamed up, because what makes me cringe is its open-endedness, the suggestion that anything goes. And that's not true. When we come together as Unitarian Universalists, says a colleague, we give up some of our freedom to believe in that are not responsible. We give up the freedom to believe in harmful or unjust things. We accept the burden of responsible meaning-making and reasonable beliefs. And as you use, we agree that our meaning-making never happens at the expense of others or to the exclusion of others. Another way of putting this, again, I quote Dan Harper, you can't believe anything you want. You have to believe with your heart and soul and your mind that love can transform the world. What have you discovered about this chosen faith? How do you live your belief in the transformative power of love? How do you continue to make meaning and find purpose in our colorful, billowing Unitarian Universalist tent? What are the deepest mysteries and truths that life has revealed to you? This faith is not a thin gruel, says Meg Barnhouse. It's not even rich and hearty gruel. It's walnuts and bananas, pancakes, mangoes, arugula, ginger, and avocado. This feast is prepared with effort, enjoyment, and commitment. Do you care to join me? Amen. May it be so.